My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. We hope you'll stay tuned.
And we are joined by Mike Rupert from the Wilderness today. Mike, thanks for being with us on the program.
My pleasure again, Mike.
Well, I appreciate you working with our schedule and all of that. And I'm looking at the latest edition of the newsletter that you publish from the Wilderness. And the big words I am looking at say, "Don't blink, all promises broken. Volume 2, hearings held without notice behind closed doors. You might miss what's next." Mike has been with us on several occasions to talk about the Central Intelligence Agency, and he knows of what he speaks. And we, of course, have been primarily focusing on the CIA and its involvement in narco trafficking. Mike, for those people who don't know who you are, can you give them a little bit of your background so we can then begin to talk about what the latest issues are? And I'd also like us to talk about the housing and urban development issue as well.
Okay. Well, briefly, I'm the former LAPD narcotics detective, but I come from earlier roots. All of my family, my mother and father, were connected to the Army Security Agency, National Security Agency, the CIA. I come from a whole family deeply rooted in the national security establishment and was groomed that way. I was born in Washington, D.C. My mother was actually a cryptographer working for Cordell Hull's mission to Moscow in 1943 and the first Tehran conference. I discovered in the 70s, as I was being recruited actually for a second time by CIA, I never went to work for them, that the agency was dealing large quantities of drugs then, in the 70s, to fund covert operations. This was, of course, long before Iran-Contra, and it cost me my career with LAPD. I had discovered, of course, that the agency had very close relationships with a number of police departments all around the country, up to and including putting case officers in deep cover in police departments to get around their prohibitions of operating domestically. You have to pardon a little background noise here. There's a leaf blower that just turned up right outside my window.
I can hear it.
I confronted CIA Director John Deutsch at Locke High School in Watts in November of 1996 after the Gary Webb Dark Alliance stories had broken, and confronted him with hard evidence of CIA drug trafficking. And I have been interviewed extensively by the intelligence committees of both houses, and basically for 21 years I've been trying to expose CIA's deep involvement in the drug trade as part of its funding for covert operations. I now publish From the Wilderness, which is now going into its 17th consecutive month. I have now 8 members of Congress, 2 intelligence committees, about 7 college professors, and 8 or 9 published authors who subscribe to the newsletter, and I cover all of the nefarious deeds of the agency. And so that's, and I've been doing that pretty much nonstop now with good reviews.
Well, certainly been doing it very, very well from my perspective, and I'm very glad to have you on the program to talk about these issues. I'd like to, just to set the stage again with something, and that's to talk a little bit about Volume 2. For regular listeners to this program, you know that we have been covering the issue of CIA narco trafficking and have had a number of guests on, journalists and investigators and scholars who have talked about their investigations. And one of the things that happened is that as a result of the pressure that was mounted in part by Gary Webb's book, Dark Alliance, the CIA allegedly investigated itself, and out of that investigation came something which is now being commonly referred to as Volume 2. And Mike, when you were on the program last time, you talked about Volume 2, and that Volume 2 is a virtual, if not literal, confession of the agency's conspiracy to traffic in narcotics, correct?
Absolutely true. The investigations by the CIA and the Inspector General were divided into 2 parts. Part 1, Volume 1, had to do specifically with the allegations Gary Webb raised in his Dark Alliance stories regarding Los Angeles Freeway Ricky Ross, Danilo Blandon, Norwin Meneses, and a lot of drug dealers also up in the Bay Area. That volume, the declassified version of it, basically in the cover letters, put the kibosh on Gary's stories. However, if you read the volumes, you actually found that what they did was tend to corroborate Gary's story. Volume 2 was a broader look at the CIA's covert activities throughout the Contra era, all over, let's say, the Western Hemisphere, certainly North and Central America. its interrelations with all of the Contra groups and all of the allegations. And for those of us who had been following this for a long time through the Kerry Committee reports, the Christic lawsuit, and the long history of this, we knew that Volume 2 was going to have to come up with a lot of damning information. We had no idea how much was going to actually be there. It was released in a declassified version on October the 8th of last year, 1 hour after Henry Hyde's Judiciary Committee voted to start the impeachment inquiry of Bill Clinton.
Right.
And this report utterly condemned. I mean, there are page after page after page of admissions. I mean, in point of fact, as specific to say that a major drug trafficker, Setco, dealing 4 tons a month, was using bank accounts established by Oliver North. It's there in the CIA report that other guys caught with hundreds and hundreds of kilos said, I can't tell you why I'm doing this because I'm doing it for the National Security Council. Just amazing revelations. And, of course, all of which hurt Republican interests from the era. Now, there was supposed to be an open hearing on the contents of Volume 2, which is what many of us had pinned our hopes on, and those hopes were dashed on May 25th.
Talk, if you will, about that, but first let me also let the listeners know that should they want to get an extract of the reports that were done by the CIA, they can get that through you, can't they?
Absolutely can. You can go to my website at www.copvcia.com. They're $12.95 plus shipping and handling. I can take the sales over the web, or you can write to me at P.O. Box 6061-350 in Sherman Oaks, California. That's from the Wilderness Publications. And these are the 44 most damning pages, including, Mike, a memorandum from Reagan Attorney General William French Smith to CIA Director Bill Casey, which basically tells the CIA it doesn't have to report drug dealing by its employees anymore. That's the foundation of a class action suit we have filed in Oakland and Los Angeles.
I'd like to focus, if we can, on the memorandum, because I think it's really, really important to try and crystallize this for the audience.
Okay.
As I understand it, the memorandum was rewritten to specifically exclude the CIA from having to report on agents and assets and contractors who were trafficking in narcotics. I mean, it's very clear that the memorandum was written so that way they could specifically not have to report on those types of criminal activities while being required to allegedly report on other types of criminal activities, correct?
Yes, and actually this conspiracy or this premeditation was actually a two-stage process. In the first part of the negotiations, Department of Justice and CIA agreed for CIA to be able to take all of its agents, assets, informants, contract employees, foreign nationals, and suddenly classify them as non-employees, which is kind of unusual because that's, you know, they got their paychecks from
right.
CIA. And then it said, the memorandum itself stated, in light of these provisions and in view of the fine cooperation DEA has received, no formal requirement for reporting narcotics violations has been included in these procedures, so it suddenly gave CIA the total green light for everybody who was not a case officer to deal drugs. And what's very interesting that I point out on my website is that this memorandum was negotiated by a special assistant to William French Smith by the name of Ken Starr.
Isn't it funny how these names just keep popping up over and over, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is absolutely. Actually, Ken Starr and Bill Casey were very close friends.
We're talking with Mike Rupert, who publishes From the Wilderness. We're discussing the Central Intelligence Agency and its involvement in narco-trafficking. Mike, I mean, one of the things that we talked about previously regarding the memorandum is that, from your experience as a police officer, this, in and of itself, is more evidence than is often available and used in any number of criminal conspiracy cases, correct?
There is so much evidence right now that were we ever able to get this before a jury, we could win the case hands down in a New York minute, either civilly or criminally. There's a huge case. There's proof. We don't need proof. We have wheelbarrows and baskets full of proof to choke the human consciousness. We have so much proof.
And also, too, just to refresh listeners' memories, a class action suit, at least one class action suit, has already been filed regarding this case, correct?
Actually, three.
Three now.
One in Los Angeles and one in Oakland, both of which are identical, were filed simultaneously March 15th of this year. And then I believe it was in early May, a third class action suit was filed in Gainesville, Florida, along the same model, using the same wording. And basically, these suits are very simple in that we are so confident that we don't need to do any battle to get government documents because we already have what we need to prove the case. And we decided, I went up and visited some Bay Area attorneys, Bill Simpich and Katya Komisarek, who are handling the case in the Bay Area now, and said, we don't have to do anything else. We just take what we've got on paper with the memorandum, Volume 2, and everything else, and sue the CIA and Department of Justice along the same lines as the tobacco model. In other words, the agency and Department of Justice conspired to let the drug trafficking happen, failed to report it, failed to intervene with it, and they knew people were going to die, and that's wrong. That's a crime. We don't have to prove, although I certainly believe it, that CIA handled the drugs itself and the CIA targeted minorities. We don't have to prove that. It's just like the tobacco model. You knew it was going to kill people. It did. You're liable.
You bring up the issue of CIA targeting minorities, and certainly the revelations regarding the Department of Housing and Urban Development seem to corroborate that. Perhaps before we talk about the backstabbing move that Congress made in May, can we talk a little bit about HUD and let listeners know about that? Because I think that's very important.
Sure. One of my new contributing editors, or actually my new contributing editor, I only have one, is Catherine Austin Fitz, who served as Assistant Secretary of Housing and Urban Development under George Bush, President George Bush. Catherine had a great career on Wall Street, and she became Managing Director of the investment bank Dillon Reed before coming to HUD. She lasted at HUD for about a year and a half and couldn't go along with certain unethical and possibly illegal practices she saw being put into place by operated by Jack Kemp and the IG there at HUD, Frank Keating, who is now Governor of Oklahoma. She left. And then she became a consultant for HUD under Secretary Henry Cisneros, who, as most people know, got horribly trashed, and he may actually get off because he may be vindicated, but he was pretty much ruined in 96. And Catherine had developed a whole series of databases, and her basic philosophy is that more wealth can be created by putting equity ownership in the hands of the people who live in the neighborhoods. And she was actually taking, as a consultant to HUD, HUD contracts, and instead of farming them out to Korea, she was putting them into HUD projects in Washington, D.C., and inner cities in New Orleans and Boston and so forth, being very successful, selling HUD mortgages that had defaulted back out on the market, bringing in billions of dollars. But these databases started showing to her, demonstrating to her, and I published one of these maps in my May newsletter in an exclusive article written by Catherine, which showed this unbelievable concentration of defaulted home loans in South Central Los Angeles, all from the same period when the CIA-induced crack cocaine epidemic was rampaging. And this documentation showed that middle-class working blacks who owned homes and, let's say, had a $100,000 mortgage in South Central, when the drive-bys were raging, the drug dealing was rampant, and whole neighborhoods were being destroyed, suddenly found their $100,000 house worth $50,000. As the jobs and economic base left, they couldn't keep up the payments, so many, many, many hundreds and thousands of African-American middle-class families fled Los Angeles and defaulted on their home loans. And these homes were subsequently scooped up for 10, 20 cents on the dollar. And I will have more stories on this in my newsletter in the near future. Catherine is currently working on this as part of a number of court cases. She was trashed. She was just, they destroyed her like a steamroller rolling over an ant as soon as she started publishing this information, and she couldn't figure out why, but it was all connected to what we believe, and I believe there is evidence going back to the mid-60s after the Detroit riots and the Kerner Commission, that there was a deliberate policy to, quote, spatially deconcentrate.
Right.
African-Americans out of inner cities because they were a political and economic threat, and that this use of drugs and crime to make cohesive African-American middle-class communities disintegrate, literally explode, has actually been applied all over the country.
Now, that's a very interesting thing you bring up, because we have covered that topic in from other perspectives, that there was and is a program whereby to decentralize black populations. And, you know, of course, depending on, you know, who is talking about it, the people who want to defend it say, oh, well, you know, what we're really trying to do is to help eliminate pockets of poverty. But many, many more people are talking about it in the terms that you're talking about, which is we don't want cohesive black communities because then they will gain too much political and economic power. And certainly I looked at the map that you were talking about, and whether it was an intended effect or not, it certainly was an effect. And, you know, I don't think anybody can argue with that. And certainly we know what happens when people try to point these things out. They certainly do get trashed. And that's happened to you as well. At least people have tried.
I've been at it for 21 years. Everybody calls me Grandpa because they were shooting at me in 77. But, you know, everybody has been nuked. But I think also, Mike, what's real important out of this is that we have this other effect called gentrification.
Yes.
where people make millions and millions of dollars in profits out of these depressed areas, and it appears to be a deliberate pattern of destroying certain areas to drive the real estate values down, only so that you can buy them low and then build them back up and make huge profits. And we think we're going to be able to show that that happened in Manhattan and New York and the Bronx in a subsequent article very soon. So it's pretty ugly.
Right, and so many of these things are so interconnected on so many levels, and they do always kind of revolve back around. I mean, the old phrase, follow the money, is still good, and probably will remain good for our lifetimes. We're talking with Mike Rupert, who is the publisher of From the Wilderness. We're talking about the CIA. Mike, the Congress said they were going to investigate the CIA's report, and somehow it seems like they kind of did, but they kind of didn't, and they certainly tried to put it behind closed doors, didn't they?
They really tried to pull a fast one. We have been waiting now since last October, of course, for an open and public hearing on Volume 2. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of letters off my website at www.copvcia.com, and through my newsletter I've been advocating people to contact the House Intelligence Committee and demand open hearings. And I personally let 600-700 letters have gone in, phone calls, lots of complaints. And we thought they were going to have open hearings, and they were so afraid, apparently, of what was in Volume 2 that they, when they had a closed-door hearing, they knew that even just announcing they were going to have a closed-door hearing would have evoked a response. So they put a misleading label up on their web page and said, we're going to hold a hearing on CIA and drugs in Los Angeles, which is not what Volume 2 was about. And they snuck in something from the Inspector General of Justice on Los Angeles for, like, you know, probably a short period of time, and then held their hearing on Volume 2. I got a letter from House Intelligence and a phone call saying, well, we'd like to know if there's anything else you'd like to submit before we close it out. And I said, what? What about the hearing? And they said, oh, we had that.
Oh, you missed it.
Yeah, gee, I'm sorry. So I sent them, there is a letter which I hope to be able to print in the next newsletter from Bill Casey, which is top secret, and I have to make sure that it happens legally so that I don't go to jail, which really admits to everything about the drug dealing. It kind of protects George Bush and maintains a cover story that they did it to fight communism, which is hogwash. It was all economic. Which I hope to have in the next issue. And so I was kind of thinking, oh, my gosh, they're going to get away with it. But now I just got a call yesterday from the attorneys for the class action suit in Oakland. And the Oakland City Council has agreed to hold an open public hearing to vote on whether the city of Oakland should join the class action suit and or sue the CIA itself and write a letter to President Clinton, the House Intelligence Committee, the CIA, and Department of Justice, asking them to just settle the suit because the evidence is so strong and start paying out some money. and the other part of that would be that that the House Intelligence Committee should have open hearings like they were supposed to do already. Now, this hearing in the Oakland City Hall chambers is going to take place on the 13th, which is a week from
today. You bet.
At 7 p.m. on the third floor. And the attorneys are saying everybody who can show up, because if one or more cities sues the CIA, it is no longer an ignorable issue. And they may be able to put the brakes on House Intelligence closing out Volume 2 and pulling a fast one on us.
Certainly that would seem to be the case. I mean, if we can get a governmental entity like the city of Oakland, I mean, it's going to be really, really hard for the major press to ignore that. I mean, they're going to have to cover it.
Well, we hope so.
You would think so.
We hope so. One of the reasons why the House really wants to get rid of this now is because, of course, the details of Volume 2 utterly trashed the Reagan-Bush administrations, and George Bush was running all of the contra-drug efforts, and now we are on the very start of the hardcore presidential campaign where George W. Bush is the front-running Republican candidate, and the Republican-controlled committee wants to close this thing out so that it doesn't embarrass baby Bush.
No, I was just looking at that. I just happened to pull out the latest copy of the newsletter that I have, and in fact, I'm looking at that part of it, and certainly one could see where if Father Bush's activities are gaining press coverage, that's certainly going to damage the presidential aspirations of the shrub, as Jim Hightower refers to him.
I like that.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's pretty good. And I mean, you know, it's just really amazing that we have what certainly appears to be, and I'll use appears because I don't want to have anybody say I'm trying to libel anyone, but I mean, there's really an awful lot of overwhelming and what appears to be incontrovertible evidence that the Central Intelligence Agency allowed for this huge influx of drug trafficking, and that the government as a whole, except for a very, very few courageous individuals, are just working overtime rather than trying to expose the criminals and be gone with them, are working and putting all kinds of energy into just covering the whole thing up so they can conduct business as usual. I mean, that's really what's happening here, isn't it, Mike?
And actually, Mike, I even think it's worse than that. As I wrote this month in my editorial, The world volume in the drug business, like $440 billion, you know, it's so big a number people don't grasp it. But I tried to use some numbers to indicate and to prove there that the volume of cash generated by the drug trade is part of what's fueling the drive on Wall Street. It affects and infects the entire economy to the point where we are hooked on the drug trade. Every man, woman, and child in this country, in this economy, is affected by it, because that much money, the Russians only asked for $18 billion a year ago to save their whole economy, with $200 billion being laundered throughout America, and that cash being available for loans to Goldman Sachs or, you know, major Wall Street investment banks at much less cost of capital, that money is financing leveraged buyouts and mergers, that money is buying banks, that money is doing everything. And that's the one thing that the government can't really afford to look at head on, is that the rule of law doesn't exist, and that organized crime and the government have, in a sense, from the economic standpoint, become one and the same.
Well, I was just thinking, I mean, this is the kind of thing that puts Al Capone to shame, and out mafias the mafia.
Absolutely. You know, in the political world and in the economic world, let's say that General Electric, which owns NBC, by the way. Now, General Electric has easily sold $10 million worth of consumer electronics to people who benefit from the drug trade in South America last year. That's a pretty easy assumption. Refrigerators, radios, whatever they were selling. They bought $10 million worth of GE stuff. But at a price-to-earnings ratio of 30 to 1, that $10 million equates to $300 million increase in GE stock value on Wall Street. With a $300 million stock increase, now all the executives of the company make their money off of the stock, so do the investors. NBC is not going to do an honest report on the drug trade if their parent corporation's stock value might fall by $300 million.
Right.
That's what drives this whole thing right now. And by the same token, if I'm Goldman Sachs and I'm financing a buyout just to pick names of RJR buying Nabisco, and I'm going to do a leverage buyout, that is, borrow the money. I can borrow the money from a bank at 10% from a consortium of banks, or I can go for once-laundered drug money at 5% offshore, which is perfectly legal for Goldman Sachs to do. And I can borrow the drug money for 5%, which now makes it perfectly legal for Pablo Escobar or whoever the drug dealer is, But since I have a lower cost of capital, I can outbid everybody else, and my payments remain exactly the same. Anybody who's ever financed a car knows that's why interest rates are so important. You can buy a bigger car for a lower interest rate.
You bet. You know, Mike, you really have a really great way of putting these things. I recorded an excerpt from an interview that we did when you were talking about the CIA and how it's an agency and how it works on behalf of, mm-hmm. and incorporated that into a promotional for the show, because you have a way of really putting these things in a very, very succinct package that makes the enormity of it pretty easy to understand. Mike, we only have about a minute left. Can you give the listeners contact information and then a brief final thought?
Yes, absolutely. All the information that we talk about, or most of it's available on my website, which is at www.copvcia.com. Or you can write to me at From the Wilderness, P.O. Box 6061-350 in Sherman Oaks, California, and that's 91413. And I have a newsletter, From the Wilderness, comes out once a month, $35 a year. You can join the Congress and the professors and authors, and I'd love to have you on board as a reader. If they mention that they heard it on your show, Mike, I'll give them some back issues for free.
Cool.
And my last thought is that don't ever assume that the CIA drug issue is dead or that it's just the issue of CIA and drugs. It's about to take on a whole new character and tone, and it's a very serious part of an economy which I believe, and Catherine Fitz believes, who was a former Assistant Secretary of Housing, that is on the verge of implosion and collapse unless it changes the way it does business.
Mike Rupert, publisher of From the Wilderness, thank you for being with us on the program, and if we can, we'll get back with you and set up another date.
My pleasure, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it for this edition of the program. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. If you're interested in copies of this or other Full Logic Reverse programs, you can contact us via email at flr@jps.net or by telephone at area code 530-265-9462. Full Logic Reverse is produced at FLR Studios in Nevada City, California, USA. Our music is by Rick Payne. We hope you'll join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.